The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, made up of 6 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and chaired by former California State Treasurer Phil Angelides, was formed in 2009 by Congress and tasked with examining the domestic and global causes of the U.S. financial and economic crises. On January 27th, the bipartisan commission released its 633-page final report, where a majority on the panel concluded that the financial meltdown could have been avoided and was the result of poor decision-making both in government and at top Wall Street and financial firms that fostered a culture of excessive risk-taking. The report includes dissenting opinions by Republican members who argued that government housing programs, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, were to blame for the crisis by setting off the subprime lending boom when they promoted home ownership to unqualified borrowers. The commission, which was not given the responsibility for offering policy recommendations, has been criticized for not dealing forcefully with the campaign finance system, which led to irresponsible deregulation and the lack of accountability for Wall Street bankers who triggered the financial meltdown. Unlike criminal probes after the Great Depression and the savings and loan banking scandal in the 1980s, to date, no prosecutions have been initiated against financiers whose reckless behavior left 24 million Americans unemployed and 4 million foreclosed homes. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Mary Buttari, director of the Real Economy Project at the Center for Media and Democracy, who takes a critical look at the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission report and the work that still needs to be done to prevent future economic meltdowns.
What's so interesting about the conclusions is that, on the one hand, the information isn't new. So, for instance, you know, the Federal Reserve could have done something to crack down on mortgage abuses and predatory lending when these practices were first brought to their attention is not a new conclusion. But to have it out there and to name some of the key moments of deregulation and missed opportunity, you know, like the SEC should have required more capital and they shouldn't have let the investment banks get away with these incredible leverage limits in 2002, somehow telling these truths is now a radical act in Washington, D.C., because as soon as the report was released, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce went ballistic and blamed the commission for an abuse of the process and for becoming WikiLeakers by actually daring to put the real documents, the real emails, the real interview transcripts up on the Internet.
From what I've been reading, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, there has been nobody on Wall Street, none of these banking corporations, has been sent to jail for their reckless behavior, which has certainly cost many people their small fortunes and their large fortunes. Unlike back in the 1930s during the Depression, there were bankers and Wall Street con artists who did go to jail. And the same thing in the scandal of the savings and loan banks back in the 1980s. There were prosecutions. Tell us from where you sit, why we haven't seen any accountability in what everybody is saying is, of course, the worst economic collapse since the Great Depression.
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Not a single CEO, one of these big mortgage firms like Ameriquest or Countrywide or those kinds of firms, or one of the big banks, has been prosecuted and sent to jail. The only Wall Street successful Wall Street prosecutions so far have been for Ponzi schemes, Bernie Madoff and Jim Stanford down in Florida. But back in the S&L crisis, there were 1,500 prosecutions of top officers. 1,000 people went to jail. 500 of them were CEOs. I mean, that's a pretty nice track record. And they were small S&Ls scattered across the United States. They didn't have the type of concentrated wealth and power and political might that the Wall Street firms have. And Congress played a really active role in the whole S&L crisis. I mean, the hearings that Congress had into the S&L crisis, and they would call the regulators in front of them, they would call the S&L leaders in front of them, and they would push the regulators, they would push the FDIC and the SEC to do a better job and to investigate further and to do more, and they'd pound on the table. Well, that didn't happen in this instance. Neither the regulators nor Congress really did their due diligence in pushing for these types of prosecutions. And there was no money made available like there was in the SNL crisis. And if you were a cynical person, you might think it has something to do with the fact that Wall Street is one of the largest contributors to Congress that we have.
Well, Mary, as we conclude here, what's your assessment of the congressional financial regulation reform legislation that was passed? Certainly, there are many people who have criticized it as too weak, that it won't prevent the whole too-big-to-fail syndrome and some of these big institutions that may find themselves doing similar acts of recklessness in the future. If you were to go back to the drawing board on financial regulation reform, where would you go?
Well, to my mind, the single most important issue is the issue of too-big-to-fail. The six largest banks right now, their assets are worth 64% of GDP. That's how big they are. Okay? Bank of America, its assets are worth or comparable to 16% of GDP. If one of these institutions goes down, it poses a huge risk to the system. And they didn't get smaller during the course of the financial crisis. They got larger. So I think only 17 years ago, that number wasn't 64%. It was under 50%. So we still have these behemoth institutions. The taxpayers are still backing up their risky behavior. We didn't separate the bank from the casino, although we tried very hard. So this issue of too big to fail has not been solved. It's still out there. And Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, which is perhaps the United States' largest bank, promises a financial crisis every 5 to 7 years, he says. And so it may take another one of these for us to get the type of reform that we really need.
That was Mary Batari, director of the Real Economy Project at the Center for Media and Democracy. Contact the project by calling area code 608-260-9713 or visit their website at banksterusa.org.